good friend of mine and a church that I oversee now, Cornerstone Mennonite Church up in Hartville, Ohio. Ron and Wanda have been there for about a year, right? About 14 months that they've been there. And so I'm very excited about them being there because they, before they came to Cornerstone, this established congregation, they had been involved in planting two churches in the prior 10 years in that same area. And so I don't know if you want to talk about what was that like, Ron, for you to, after doing all this church planting, to come into an established congregation. If you want to, you can talk about that. But mainly, I want him to talk to you about church planting. And so, Ron, come and tell us about it. And if you want, I don't know what, how you want to set up. You just want to sit here?
Yeah, we'll have.
You want to have
this? Yes.
Yeah, okay.
It's been a delight to spend last evening and this morning with you and get to know you, some of you, a little bit already. And okay, thank you.
Like I say, my name is Ron Embleton, which is not Beiler, Schwarzentruber, Yoder, Zare, or anything else. And but I my ticket to heaven, I married a Schwarzentruber, okay? Her name is Wanda, and she is the light of my life. We got to know each other here playing ping pong. So with that, we can relate. And first, though, I got to take care of something. Last evening, we were asked to describe the type of ice cream that we would approach conflict in, and I had the privilege of talking to Liz. And I played the Apostle Peter before he had the Holy Spirit. I opened my mouth and inserted foot. I said the wrong thing. Liz says she likes death by chocolate. I didn't think about that, and when I responded, I cast her in a bad light. I've apologized to her. She's been gracious to forgive me. No, her fangs don't come out. What she means is she loves to move towards and through conflict, get it done with quickly, not fangs out, slash and burn, okay? So thank you, Liz, for your love, forgiveness, and for leading us in worship this morning. Wasn't that awesome? Last evening, too. And, you know, we're singing that song, God Almighty, the great I am. And and here we are, Mennonites, talking about planting churches and how long it takes to make a committee or procedure decision. And we're singing about the great I am. Are we having a form of godliness yet denying the power? Jesus, I'm starting to preach, but he said, I will build my church. That's why he came, to build his church. And then he told his disciples, go, not come, go and make disciples. Go into all the world, to everyone, not just some. And he said, make disciples, not just believers. And that in and of itself, I just challenge you to just meditate and think on and chew on what Christ said and what he did in a short time, in 3 years, that exploded, that blew up when he sent the Spirit. And to hear the messages that we heard this weekend from Doug and from Keith and others as they talked about the power of God and evangelism. And yeah, I walked out of there just really excited. But back to the idea of Embleton. Let me tell you how it came into the Menno circles, okay? Back in 1917, my grandfather and his siblings, four others, they were placed in the Grantsville, Maryland Children's Home. He stayed there till he was 13 years old, being brought up in the ways of God, the teachings of Gladys, I believe her name was, who was a teacher there. And then he begged Valentine Bender, who came up from Delaware, to pick up a little boy named Wade Welfley to work on his dairy farm. He said, "Don't you have room for one more?" And Wade just couldn't, or Valentine couldn't stand the fact. He called his wife and said, "Do we have room for one more?" And he agreed to take John, my grandfather, down to Delaware. And my grandfather, from 13 to 18, grew up helping Nevin Bender and Valentine Bender on the farm, and fell in love with a little Amish Mennonite girl, Martha Miller, who had moved in from Defiance, Ohio. So yeah, then I can talk Mennonite with you, okay? I was born in Embleton, but I grew up in a Mennonite home in a conservative community, went to a Christian day school, Greenwood Mennonite School. And so that is my background. So whether I look different than the rest of you, and my name being Embleton, yes, I got the roots, but I got Jesus. And Jesus came to seek and to save the lost. And he saved me, and he has radically changed my life. And he continues to be radical in my life. And there's still a whole lot to go and a whole lot to do. But we have seen him work and do some incredible things. And so, yeah, I met Wanda, and we were here at Rosedale. And the second term that I was here, we did lose our dating privileges, but that was the last week. Anyway, lots of ping pong led to too much time together as an 18-year-old back then. And so we lost our dating privileges because we were seeing too much of each other. 6 months later, I asked her to marry me, and a year and a half later, after she went to nurse's training, and I was working for Warfel Construction, we did get married, and thought, wow, is this all there is? Well, no. Life is great, you know. She was working as a nurse, I was working in construction and moonlighting on the side, and trying to make all the money we could and get a good start and buying a place, and yet I did found myself asking the question, is this all there is? Because I had been wrestling with a call on my life before then. Wasn't sure how that would pan out. Our church, Greenwood Mennonite, was not looking to put men into ministry. They were basically doing church, maybe like your community, just doing church, and there wasn't really a felt need to provide an opportunity for ministry development. Fortunately, RMM put out a bulletin that they were looking for church planting apprentice in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And so there we were, newlyweds, about a year and a half in. Wanda had already left her home to come live with me. She grew up, tell them where you grew up, Wanda.
I grew up in Kentucky. My parents moved from his community, actually, to Kentucky before I was born. So I grew up on Turner's Creek. Said I would never marry anybody from the north or a preacher because my dad traveled a lot. And one time while he was gone for a few weeks, I told Mom, I'm never going to marry somebody like that. They're always gone.
Especially anyway. From Delaware, because we made fun of her.
So, yeah, that's my background. I didn't marry a preacher, but I know that God prepared to have us together, and he knew that this was the right fit. And so I've been very happy in ministry, very fulfilled. And I too, like him, wondered, okay, so we're working. We go to church 3 times a week. But we just felt that emptiness inside. And so a community, there was another church in the community that was doing a, what would you call it? Some kind of a crusade. And they asked for people who would be willing to come from all the churches to pray with the people that came forward. And we thought, wow, we'd love to do that. So we went to a couple of preparatory meetings, and then the first night of the crusade, the call was, are you willing to go wherever God calls you? And him and we were the first ones, one of the first ones up, just giving ourselves. So we weren't doing the praying with people, but we were responding to a call.
And our friends and family did not understand. Why would I want to leave a job where I was already been given a lot of responsibility as a foreman at 21, and she was nursing, and you know, life was good. And why would we want to just walk away from all of that when we were just getting started and go to Albuquerque? You know, do they have electricity out there? Yes, they do. And but that was the lack of awareness. We moved to Albuquerque in January of 1985. And so, yes, we've been in this kind of mission work and church planting settings for 30-some years. We were in that snowstorm in San Antonio in January of 85, and it snowed 13.5 inches, and there's no road machinery to clear that out. And we were staying with a midwife who got the call that night. Scared to death to drive her little rabbit out anywhere, so I drove, and Wanda assisted in the birthing process, and that was kind of our introduction to helping outside the circle, so to speak. We got to Albuquerque, met Gary and Ruth Troyer, and the first thing they told us to do was go get a job. So there we were in BS, and he said, go get a full-time job. And so City of Albuquerque, Latin culture primarily. I went out having been, had a little bit of experience on running heavy equipment, and I hired on with a plumbing company that did sewer taps, water taps, and that type of thing in the streets. And I was the backhoe operator for that year. So we were expected by them to work full time. Wanda went out and got a job as a nurse. So there we were, newlywed, away from home, working full-time, and Gary says, okay, you're my apprentices. I'm going to show you how to plant a church. So we were there about a week, and he called us up and said, hey, it's time to get started. I'm coming over, and we're going to go knock on doors. And that's how we began. We went across the fence, apartment complex, started knocking on doors. He could speak Spanish. I could not. But Gary walked with us every step of the way. He showed us, and then he let us try, and he coached us, and then he put us on our own, and he didn't waste any time in between. For 6 months, we didn't know we could take a night off. And so we got with it and learned a lot, made a lot of mistakes, met a lot of people. But one of the things that we did was we began to incorporate others outside of our family, because our family wasn't there, into our rhythms of life. That's one of the things that if you're going to think about church planting and reaching beyond and growing your churches, you have to ask God to give you eyes to see beyond your circle, beyond your family, into other families. And that's the idea of going. And in our going, we make disciples. And we would incorporate people into our birthday parties. I threw a big birthday party for Wanda, just walked down the street and invited my neighbors that we had met up to that point in time. I think 40 or 50 people showed up, and we served them chocolate sheet cake and Kool-Aid and out of our one-bedroom apartment. And, you know, they were curious to see who we were, and we were just flying by the seat of our pants, so to speak. We had never done that before. But that was one more touch. That was one more opportunity to strengthen relationships. And pretty soon we're having Bible studies with neighbors around. And guess what you run into when you begin to have Bible studies with people that you have never met before, and even those you do? You run into their crises with them. Whether it's job crises, habit addiction crises, arguments, domestic arguments, raising kids, whatever. Albuquerque for us was a real education. And we were there for 8 years. And we, not knowing any better, tried all kinds of things. We had recovering drug addicts in our home, trying to help them go through cold turkey, things like that. And in spite of us, and there were times when we just cried out to God, said, God, I quit. And it was like he said, good, now move over and let me show you what I'm going to do. And he would surprise us with the next development that would just bless us because God was in it. Again, we sing God Almighty. Are we willing to let him surprise us? Because one of the things that I will say over and over again is God is on mission. He came to seek and to save the lost. And when he went back to heaven and said, I'll send my spirit, he didn't withdraw that. He is on mission. He is working in you, and he's working in your communities around you. And there are people looking for, praying for, asking for help, crying out to all kinds of things. And we can either be afraid and pull back because of the things we're seeing, or we can move forward in faith and we can step out in faith and trust God, asking him to give us eyes to see and ears to hear. And he will do that, and he will build his church. I'm just so convinced of that. And yeah, we've spent 8 years in Albuquerque. And during that time, we were away from our family, 2,000 miles. And we began our own family. I'll let Wanda talk a little bit about that.
How was that? What was that like?
Well, I'd never grown up around extended family. I mean, my family, I have 7 siblings, but we were in Kentucky, so we always traveled to see extended family. And so we moved to Albuquerque. We've never even lived around extended family. So I really don't know what I would do. Let's say if I had a first birthday party for our child, we invited all the neighbors in. So we had like 50 people at Derek's first birthday party. But it was an outreach is really what it was for us. And we tried to make it special for him too. But so I don't know what I would do if I were in a place where all my family were there. What would I do? You know, but we didn't have a choice.
We had made the choice.
We had made the choice to leave. And so we did. We had 4 children in Albuquerque. And I think when we left, the youngest one was a few months old when we came back to here. But the one thing that it does for you is it makes your family be a close family. You have to work out things together. You have to, that's who you have. So, and you have other people who aren't your family with you. I'll just share this. Ron's a real out there person, go get 'em, pretty busy. And so before I had children, I did everything with him. I loved it. And I didn't care that we didn't have a night off. We were spending time together, and we were feeling so fulfilled in what we were doing. We just enjoyed being with people and to being together, doing it. Well, when I started having children, and we had 4 out there, all of a sudden, I had other responsibilities. I couldn't just go with him. And so, in a sense, looking back on this now, here's what kind of happened. We kind of went in a little bit opposite direction. And we didn't work so hard on making sure that we communicated. So as we were leaving Albuquerque, Ron made some statement to me about, wow, how, you know, okay, the church.
I was feeling pretty good about what we had accomplished.
The church and with my best friend. And I said, I don't really feel like you're my best friend. And he like, my goodness, what do you mean? And I said, well, what do best friends do? You know, they care to get together. They care to talk to each other about life. They, anyway, so we kind of had to work through that. He immediately started the next day or whenever. When he came back from wherever he was going, the first 15 minutes were mine. And the kids already knew that they had to go in the other room and play, and we were going to talk. And so we got to talk. And that made the biggest difference for me, just, you know, some time where we could talk about whatever was happening in our lives, whatever. It just made that made the relationship a lot stronger. So I would just encourage you all, as you have your young children and as you're in ministry together, to just make that check-in time a daily thing, or don't let it go too long.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was a real wake-up call for me. And, you know, I look around the room here, and you guys are all young couples, and you have young kids, and oh, it's just, you know, we're having flashbacks this morning as we see you and your children interacting, and that was a great time in our life. And yet, at the same time, a person, and I did, I instead of going deep, I spent a lot of time fooling myself by being busy and thinking, you know, I'm about God's work, and I was neglecting my first ministry. And so that was a real wake-up call, and one that changed me, changed our life, because, you know, I want her to be my best friend. God has brought us together. He has joined us together. And when we do not nurture this relationship and check in and pray with each other and talk about our dreams and plans and frustrations and just do that rhythm of life together, then a very vital part of who we are, who you are, is missing. And so I can't stress that enough. And yet, the enemy will try to make you feel guilty for spending time with your spouse or family. But they are your first ministry. They are gifts from God. They belong to God first, and I'll talk about that a little bit later on. But they are your primary ministry. Not that you should substitute everything that God is also calling you to do so that you can spend time with family. But at the same time, they are your primary ministry. So there has to be a prayerful discernment of how to walk through the rhythms of life in church planning or ministry when you are called to be married. You're not called to be celibate. You're called to be married. And that is something that is very important and something that I had to learn the hard way. But I'm so thankful for my friend and my soulmate, and that we've been able to be on this journey together. There are two questions that I just want to throw out here today as we think about ministry and think about church planting. And I realize that I'm talking to you from my perspective. How many of you have read Alan Hirsch 5Q? Have you read that book? Some of you have. If you haven't read it, I encourage you to read it, get a hold of it, digest it, talk about it with your spouse, with your leadership team. Because God has given some to be apostles, prophets, evangelists, shepherds, and teachers. Why? For the building up of His church where Christ is the head. And so, as I am talking to you today from an apostolic perspective, you may be sitting here today thinking, well, I'm more of a shepherd, or I'm more of a teacher, or I'm more of a prophet, or I don't know what I am. I'd encourage you to spend some time figuring that out, because how you approach ministry is very much how you are wired. And so I'm sharing with you today, at Steve's request, from an apostolic perspective, where I thrive on going somewhere and seeing something start afresh and new. And yes, I was a framer. I do have a background of commercial, as a commercial contractor, and building, and it's nothing like seeing something come out of the ground and be framed up and take shape and be finished and beautiful. And then we call the flooring guy in, and he puts in a beautiful floor, and then people come in and they're happy and they smile and they either share it with others or they keep it to themselves. But as I share with you today, two questions that I feel are pillars in my way of thinking and as ministers. What does God want? And what does it look like if He were to do what He wanted through me? What does God want? We know Jesus wants to build His church. For me, that means let's go plant churches. Okay? For you, it might mean something a little bit different. I need to teach well. I need to shepherd. I need to this. And what does it look like if He were going to do that through me? But coming back to that first question, what does God want? He's not willing that any should perish, but that all come to repentance. He so loved the world that He gave His Son, so that whosoever believes will not perish, but have everlasting life, have eternal life with Him. Jesus says, I will return and take you to myself, where we can be together, because I love you. And so here we are, young pastor couples, starting out, wondering what's next, how God is going to use us. Maybe you're scared to death. Maybe you feel like you got it together.
But number one, I would challenge you to learn to know who you are and what does God want and what does it look like if he were to do that through me, you. And then at the same time, ask God to show you and build around you the team of people who are able to fill in where you would not naturally normally tend to minister and to go. If you are a teacher, ask for a shepherd. If you are, you know, if you need an apostle, a prophet, ask God to raise those people up around you because he desires to build his church. And he will. And he does. And I believe in a nation like ours that he can do it a lot quicker than what we've been led to believe. I share that with you because 10 years ago, 11 years ago, we were asked to become church planters in Northeast Ohio by a non-denominational church that was growing and about 2000, and yet they knew that people were coming in from a distance. And so we were hired by them at this point full-time. We have been both. We have been self-supporting. We've been part-time. We've been no time. We've been full-time. It doesn't really matter to God. What does he want? What does that look like? Lord, make me a vessel that you can use. And Jesus said, if we come to him and drink, what will he do? Streams of living water will come from us. And so our primary responsibility is to be joined with him and to be seeking him and seeking his face and praying and ministering first to the primary ministry he's given us, and then asking him to use us as a team, as a couple, to move forward, to do what he wants to do through us. He is able to make the sower and the reaper glad together. Yes, I know there are stories of people who worked for 20 years and never saw a convert. I also know from our own experience that we were sent to Brimfield, Ohio, back in 2008 when the economy was crashing around our ears. And we heard things like, churches are full of scandal, and they just want my money. And you know, because I was interviewing people, I was cold calling, I was stopping in at businesses just to get to know the area. And I heard all kinds of things. We don't want your kind around here. And yet God, we were stepping out in faith, and he wanted to raise up a church. And in 1 year's time, we went from knowing no one to launching a church where about 300 people showed up at the launch. Some had never been to church before. We had just worked in the community, and I'll talk about that a little bit more. But God is able to do those kinds of things if we will look at the glass half full instead of half empty, if we will step out expecting him. So if I were to give you one more thing to write down besides those questions, which I hope you wrote down, what does God want and what does it look like? But in your DNA as a follower of Jesus, just like in your DNA as husband and wife, you are born to reproduce. The church is designed to reproduce. God in his creative plan said, be fruitful and multiply. And yes, in the Mennonite, conservative Mennonite conference, we are born to reproduce, not just biologically. But Jesus wants to build his church. And if we step out anticipating that, it's incredible what will happen. And that's why I'm saying, as young pastors, whether you're assistant pastors or stepping into a senior role or whatever it is, as you craft your vision and begin to share that prayerfully, ask God to show you how to incorporate the dream of reproducing. Just like your home life, just like your families, God has ordained you to come together, have a family, but God forbid that all five of your children stay home when they're 30. You want them to grow up. You want them to find a mate. You want them to produce grandchildren. And yet in our churches, we don't want anyone to leave. We don't want anyone to develop. We want people to just stay there and have church. So when you think church, what do you see? What is the C in your church? Is it closed, community, comfortable, convenient? Or is it casting vision because Jesus said, I'll build my church? and the gates of hell will not prevail. We're living in a country, Rosedale National, of 20% church attendance. There's something wrong with that picture. And yet, I run into people every day who, if I ask them, you know, through the conversation, hey, is there something I can pray for you for? Most of the time, somebody says, yes, pray for this, pray for this, pray for that. Why? Because people are in crises. And in the rhythm of Christ's life, think of his ministry. Follow him through just a few chapters of any one of the Gospels. And he was meeting people in crisis or leading his disciples into faith crisis. Think of the feeding of the 5,000. What did he do? Hey, give them something to eat. Jesus, what do you think we are? Millionaires? You know, we don't have enough money in our pockets. It would take a year's worth of money. What do you have? Well, all we got is 5 loaves and 2 fishes. Well, bring them here. What's he going to do? Jesus brought them to the end of themselves, that necessary ending where they realized their helplessness, their hopelessness, and then he blessed it and said, watch. And he ministered. That was a physical way. And then he gave a teaching of, you're watching me because of I'm providing for you physically. What? Think of what I can do for you. I'm the bread of life. Again, I'm weaving some things in here. I'm going to back up and slow down a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit about our life and church planning and some of the stories that we encountered. After 8 years, we returned to Rosedale with 4 children, and we caught our breath because Gary had trained us, 2 Timothy 2:2. Anybody know what that verse is just off the top? The things you've heard me teach. Teach to faithful people so that they in turn may teach others. That's a 4-generation Paul to Timothy to faithful people that they in turn may teach others. When that becomes part of our protocol as vessels that God can use, where we see ourselves as expendable and reproducible, and we set out as that part of our DNA that we're going to reproduce and we're going to work ourselves out of a job, or we're going to ask God to raise up people around us who are even better at doing it than we are. I think Jesus said something like that, didn't he? The things you've seen me do, what will happen? You'll do greater things. Then let's not deny the power. Let's say he's the great I am, and let's go forward anticipating that. But that may mean that we hand over something that we really love to do. I love to lead worship. I love to play guitar. I love to sing. But that's one of the first things that I hand over as soon as I can in a church planting setting. Because there's other people who love to worship and love to sing and are better at playing guitar and drums and everything else than I am. And so that's something that I can hand off. What about finances? Is there someone that you highly respect the way they handle finances and they're godly men or women? That's something maybe that can be handed off. What about someone who has a passion for children? Wanted to talk about that a little bit. I mean, how you approached the whole team effort with me and where you found yourself and what makes you tick as opposed to what maybe I expected of you. Or however you want to go.
Amazing. Is this on?
No. Okay.
It was amazing to watch that take place. And Ron would sit down with anybody that came to maybe be a part of this to just kind of ask them the question. We would just go out with them for dinner or something, and he would ask them what makes you tick, what if you could write your job description for ministry, what would that look like? And
I would challenge all of you to do that.
And so one night we went out and he asked me the same question, and I'm like, well, first of all, this is just the way I want it. I don't give me a position in the church. I'm just going to be your helper, your mate, So by saying
I had expectations, and I wanted her to be that pastor's wife, you know, that I had seen. That wasn't working.
He probably wanted somebody that could lead worship like Liz and all that kind of stuff. And sometimes we can put those expectations on ourselves, like, no, I'm sorry, I'm not that person. But anyway, what that meant for me was that wherever there was a place not filled, that's usually what I did. So for years and years, I did do, in Albuquerque, I did children's ministry a lot because our kids were little and there really wasn't anybody else that was clamoring to get back there. So I did it. But for our first church plant, there was this lady that came and she had a vision
her church plant in Northeast Ohio.
Yes, her ministry was children's ministry. Oh my goodness, that was amazing. But we just watched God bring together in that first church like six different couples, and every one of them had a different strong point or a different thing that made them tick. And
but we had to be looking and asking and waiting and listening for it to see.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So what was I supposed to be telling?
That.
Anyway, for the second church plant, then I did end up doing a little bit of children's ministry and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I just would kind of fill in and praying for that person to come along who felt the call to do that kind of stuff.
But what if we would have waited until the perfect team was assembled before moving out in faith? There's a story back in Genesis about Abraham. And it says he went out not knowing where he was going, but he stepped out in faith. And church planting leadership requires us to step out in faith before we know it all. But trusting God, trusting Christ to build his church. And he seems to delight in that step of faith, and he begins to move in incredible ways. While we're in Genesis for a minute, Genesis 12, God appears to Abraham and says, "Walk before me and I will bless you." But it doesn't stop there. He says, "And I'll make you a blessing." One thing that I really noticed coming back from Turkey and plugging back into our Western culture and into Mennonite circles is how much we talk about being good people and being so blessed. The Lord has blessed us. The Lord has blessed us. And I want to ask the question almost every time I hear that, how are you being a blessing to others? Because yes, God has promised to bless his children, but he says, "And I will make you a blessing to every family, every nation." And so, God forbid that we be that bottleneck that just holds on to the blessings and talk about how blessed we are when he wants us to become the conduit, the sponge that streams of living water flow out of. And church planting and reaching out to the lost and ministering to those allows that mentality to mature and ripen and flourish from being a blessed person that God has blessed me financially and he's blessed me with a nice comfortable church and he's blessed me with a nice house and he's blessed me. Ask, how can I be a blessing to others? Because our works are going to be tried by fire. And we're to lay up treasure in heaven. Jesus' own words. He just wants that to happen. You're my hands and feet. Go, and in your going, make disciples. And I'll be with you, and I teach them to observe everything I've commanded you, because you become the conduit, the blessor. And church planting is something that I believe will just revolutionize our conference. If we will take this challenge seriously, that God is on mission. He's called us to mature and multiply. And if we will just step out in faith, ask the questions, take those people in our congregation that are restless and, Greg, are entrepreneurial. Our mentality has been, these men need to be, and women need to be in business because our church needs the finances. No. These men and women are equipped that way, possibly with an apostolic gifting, and they need to be challenged and encouraged to use that same way of thinking to go out and explore and establish new frontiers for the kingdom in church planting. Yes, we lose some of our brightest and best and maybe ultimately some of our biggest givers, but God's got plenty of big givers in the pipeline. I've seen it happen over and over again where He provides. And it's amazing. No, I don't have $1 million for retirement. Probably never will. But I've seen God do incredible things in starting churches where they told me it would never happen. We used to, in Turkey, I had to work there full time as well. For SPS International, God allowed us to open a business and allowed me to travel all over the country and present for SPS International. On the weekends, we'd come home, we'd throw all the kids in the car, five kids in a little tiny five-passenger car, drive 2 hours and go help start a house church in Adıyaman, way out in southeast Turkey, where we would lead worship and teach and want to jump in and do children's church because it was all new to them. And yet, God raised up a group of believers in Adıyaman. There's believers there today. And Şanlıurfa and Malatya and places where Lloyd and Joyce worked and Wilbur and Shirley and other places. It doesn't matter what we're facing. God is on mission. And out of that, He can do incredible things. And if you don't get anything else out of what I share with you today, I hope that my faith in what God can do will be contagious for you. That in those hard days, those dark days, fall back and turn to Him and just cry out to Him and say, God, what do you want and what does it look like? And help me to walk there. Build your church. And He will. Okay, it's been about 30 minutes, right? What time did we start? About 10:30, wasn't it, that we started, or did
no,
I?
No, it was after. It was before that. But.
Okay. Yeah. I can stop, or I can keep going. 5 minutes. Okay. All right. So I don't have much time left. But one of the things that I want to encourage you to do in ministry is apprentice. Paul called Timothy. Timothy was an apprentice. I was apprenticed by Gary Troyer, and he's dead and gone. But his legacy lives on through me and others that he apprenticed. Maybe you were apprenticed. I've used the apprenticeship in ministry, and right now we have apprentice elders at Cornerstone. They've never done that before, but these young men who are on fire for God, and rather than seeing them go off to China and VitaNet and YWAM and Reach and everywhere else, think globally, but think of your opportunity you have to bring someone alongside of you as you learn, as you grow, that you can mentor. And it might be scary to ask them, but prayerfully ask God to lead you to those people who you can tap on the shoulders. As you develop your vision, keep reproduction in it. It's part of the DNA of the body. How do we do that? Call for accountability. Follow up in your small groups. Don't just have a nice worship time and a nice Bible study. At the end, make sure you say, what are we going to do? How is God speaking to you tonight? And what are we going to do with what we're learning? And how can we hold each other accountable this week? And maybe how is we as a small group? What does God want us to do on mission with Him? Because I believe He wants to multiply us. I'm going to show you something here that starts up here, and we're just going to run through it really quick. We're going to hand them out. Those are to be handed out. And here's just some things you can take and look at and text me, ask me questions. But this is just a real quick checklist. If you're thinking about starting a church, and maybe you're going to file this in the file next to file 13 for 2 more years while you get your feet under you. I don't know. But just to run through this really quickly, I can bring it up here. I know Thomas is ready back there. Bless his heart. He's been waiting on me. Okay, for some reason I can't open that. Oh, okay, let's try this one. Okay. All right. With every child that you guys have had, there's been a time when you were talking about it and you were thinking about it, and oh my goodness, we're pregnant, you know? And is it going to be a boy or a girl? What's that look like? Well, in planting a church, there's just a couple things. The first thing I want to talk about very briefly is prayer. Prayer is something that I just want to call you to develop your personal prayer life. Begin to pray and fast for God's vision for the new church. You say, well, I don't even know what that looks like. Well, pray anyway. Ask and it'll be given you. Step out in faith. Vision and planning. Jumping to the next slide there. Write out your core values. What is it that you believe is part of the heart of your ministry? Is it relationship with Jesus Christ? Is it maturing disciples? Is it showing compassion? Those three things Jesus came to do, and he did them so well, and he calls us to be imitators of him. Formulate your mission statement. Develop a vision statement with you and your wife or with you and your ministry team. Where do we want to be 6 months from now, a year from now? What does this look like? Develop your strategy, and how do you do that? Well, through prayer and discussion and identifying your focus groups and things like that. And again, this I'm just going to race through here because it's something you can read in your spare time. Find others that will get online with you, get on board with you. The last church we planted in Northeast Ohio, we had Christian and Missionary Alliance. I had to jump through their hoops, defend my doctrine, but they got behind us at 10 grand a year for two, three years. Other churches, we had non-denominational churches and Mennonite churches, all got behind us. So how? I went to them. I sat down with their elders. I said, hey, I believe God wants us to plant a church in this place at this time. Here's what we're facing. The demographics are this and this and this. Would you pray about getting on board with us? Well, yeah, we want to plant churches. We want to see growth. We want to do this. Well, tell you what, we'll talk up to our budget committee, and we'll, we can give to missions overseas. And why not give to missions 20 minutes away? Or with a specific opportunity. And I was amazed at how churches got on board. They sent their youth groups to help us go door to door and things like that. One real fast story. The second church in Northeast Ohio, Wellspring Bible Church, is in a mall next to JCPenney. And it's been there for about 6 years. And when I first sat down with the superintendent of the mall, she said, no, we're not interested in any churches in here. I said, well, how are you doing? Well, I'm Catholic, I'm okay. But we just chatted for about 15, 20 minutes. And I said, well, tell you what, anytime you need volunteers to put on events and things like that, I said, give me a call. And I left my card. And I made a favorable enough impression upon her, I guess, that she did call me. She said, we're getting ready to have a Easter bunny bash or something, And she said, can you come in and paint faces? I said, absolutely. So we gathered some people that were interested with us, and we went in there. We helped them set up tables, and we just, she said, I don't want you preaching. I said, can we wear shirts? And she said, yeah. And so we had Wellspring Bible Church on the shirt. And she said, you can put a table all the way down at the other end of the mall if you want to give away literature, but I don't want you preaching here. Well, we just loved on people, and people asked us, who are you? What are you doing? Where are you? And that kind of thing, as we painted our kids' faces, and we just loved on them that day. That turned into another opportunity, and youth groups came in from our sending churches, and we did things like wash windows, pick up cigarette butts in the parking lot, just loved on these people at the mall. And we did other things in the city too, hanging door hangers and all kinds of things, just to get the word out, and gave away hamburgers and hot dogs, and just anywhere we could get involved, we did. And a year later, I stopped by to see her, and she said, I bet you're still looking for a space, aren't you? And we had already started the church, but we were outgrowing the place we were in. We had gone from a bowling alley to a funeral home to a real estate office, and we were outgrowing that, and we needed space. And she said, Ron, she said, I've been watching you. And you guys aren't like other churches. We want you in here. And they threw a pizza party for us, invited us in, gave us a tremendous rate on the rent, and opened their doors to us. And we've had just years of opportunity to minister. And they invited me later to set up a coffee shop, which I did for a year and a half in the mall, Center Court, rent-free. And you know, then we had to pay utilities, things like that. But just opportunity that God moves mountains, and He is on mission, and He wants to reach our communities, and He wants to use us, and He wants to love people, and He wants to show His love in and through us. Has it been easy? Not really. Has it been inconvenient? Absolutely. But what's a little inconvenience in light of eternity? Paul said, I count all things lost that I may know Him and that I may somehow experience with Him that resurrection power, that joy in knowing Him and communion with Him. God is on mission. What does He want to do in your community? What does He want to do around your community? What does He want to do, and what would it look like if He did it in you and through you? God bless you. Thank you for letting me share. I'm just getting started. If you want more, I can give you more. But hey, read this. Got any questions? Come see me. And God bless you as you minister.
Thanks a lot, Ron. I think you've captured his enthusiasm for this subject. Could be that this will be something that you'll want.